EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
Howdy, dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. How are you all? I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Our guest tonight, Steve, comes to us from Louisiana in the States. While Steve was serving in the military back in 1975, he and some others witnessed a creature not 25 foot from them on a farm in Arkansas. And there was no mistaking what it was. Steve, up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated, and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Steve, and welcome to the show.
How you doing? I'm glad to be here, and I appreciate you having me.
It's great to have you on today, Steve, and you're calling from Louisiana today.
Yes, sir. Out here in Louisiana, South Louisiana, where it's hot and it's a bunch of swamp.
Now, Steve, you have a Bigfoot encounter to share with us. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, sir?
This right here, and I just want to give you real fast insight real quick. I don't want to take time up by no means, but I just want to kind of give you some insight about myself real quick, if that's okay. Like I said, I'm 65 years old. I'm retired. I'm retired from law enforcement. When I came out of the military, I went to the law enforcement, started my career there, and retired about 3 years ago, and live out in a farm out here in the middle of nowhere in Louisiana, out in the swamps. I love it. It's literally 5.5 miles out my back door to the next house, out to the woods. I mean, I live way out here. And it's just nice. I love it that way. But anyway, originally I'm from Southern California. I, you know, grew up out there. And Uncle Sam, of course, when I went in the military when I was 18, took me all over the world. And so I ended up processing out of Fort Polk, Louisiana. I stayed over here back in the 80s. Met my wife. We got married and stayed back here. And we've been back here ever since. it's amazing. I like I said earlier, life. And I've been asked this before, what is the meaning of life? And I say, well, there's probably, you ask 10 people, get 10 different answers. But I'll tell you what my personal belief, the meaning of life is nothing more than an accumulation of memories and experiences. And that's what it is, because if you look back on what life is, it's memories and experiences. Everything you experienced and what your memories are, you created. And I believe it's time to share them. I held what I... my experience in my encounter in for over 47 years. And I just then I didn't want people to go ahead and laugh or this and that, or say, oh, you're crazy or something like that. I just kept it inside me. And even as a law enforcement officer taking reports from people who had had sightings of creatures and such, you know, I always told them, I believe what you're saying. I do believe. I didn't tell them why, because I wasn't ready to tell my encounter, but I always encouraged them. And now that I've just come out my shell, and I was asked by another podcast to go ahead and tell it on there, Sasquatch Theory on YouTube. And you know, the thing about it was I came out and it felt so good to go and get it off my chest after all the years I kept it inside, because I wouldn't even tell my wife, my kids, you know. So that's because this rattled me. And when I say it rattled me, it shook me to the core. It changed everything inside me, but prior to this night in 1975, when this happened, I didn't believe in these creatures. I thought they didn't exist. And if someone said they existed, I laughed at them. I really did. I was one of the people in the background laughing, going ahead and saying, yeah, right, you're on drugs. But that came to a critical end June night, 1975, when I came to face to face with this thing. And it just went ahead and let me know real quick, fast, in a hurry, there's things in this world we don't understand. And from that point there, my life changed. And I was able now, in the short period of time I came forward with this, was able to have other people come forward. And so my goal now, my friend is retired law enforcement and ex-military, is to go ahead and encourage other people, other law enforcement officers, other people who are ex-military, whatever, or anybody who keeping this inside of them, to come forward and encouraging them to share their encounters, because it eats them up inside, keeping it. I know that. 47 years of getting eat on, I know it eats you up inside. And so I just want to encourage a lot of people to come forward and share their encounters, because people are becoming more and more aware of what's going on now. And so I just want to throw that in the mix. Didn't mean to tie you up on that.
Hit the nail on the head there, Steve. There are so many people out there which have kept their encounters, you know, whether it's to do with UFOs or Bigfoots and Sasquatches, they have kept on to these accounts for decades, literally decades. I had a lady on not so long ago from Scotland. Now, she's in her 70s now, and she kept on to her encounter for nearly 50 years, you know. And the best thing she ever did, she said, was finally telling someone. And by you telling your account today, Steve, you know, there's going to be more people out there which go, well, if Steve can do it, then I can do it.
Right. And that's what my encouragement is. I know, and I just want to tell you this real quick. Why, you know, what brought me to talk about this in the first place and bring it out was my wife's uncle. We became really good friends and we were hunting buddies. We went ahead and hunted everywhere, all through these woods out here, and really enjoyed hunting with him. He's passed away now, but the thing about it was we had a good time. So one day I told him, I said, Uncle Lewis was over at the house, and I said, look, I'd like to go ahead and hunt over there in the Anacoka Swamp. I've never hunted there before. It's about 5 miles from here, 6 miles across the road. And I said, I'd like to go over there and hunt there. The terrain is really rough over there. It's really rough terrain. And he looked at me. He said, no. He said, son, you go there by yourself. You're going to go there, but I'm not going. And I assumed it because it was rough terrain. He was 75 years old, so at the time. And I said, okay, Uncle Lewis, I just wanted to see if you wanted to go. He said, I have my reasons. And I said, you couldn't make it through them hills over there in that rough area. He said, no, that ain't it. He said, I seen something over there back in the 50s. And he said, I'll never go back there again. And I haven't been back there since. And so it got my curiosity up. And I don't want to pry, so I didn't. Uncle Lewis, I said, you don't mind telling me what you saw? I mean, I don't want to get in your business, but you got me curious. He said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, son. He said, so, and I've never told your wife, which was his niece, and I've never told my brothers or anybody else. And I said, well, Uncle Lewis, I said, I promise you, you can tell me. And he said, why would you believe me? Uncle Lewis, I said, you tell me your story, and I'll tell you why I believe you. And he went ahead and he told me his encounter, that him and an old boy, and I knew the old fella too, named Milton Hickenbottom, real well, knew his sons real well. We used to hunt together years ago. So him and Milton back in the 50s, they grew up together out here. And they were squirrel hunting out there in Anacoka Creek. And it's a thick area right there, thick swamp. And they was up there on a hilltop right when it broke daylight. They waiting for the squirrels to come out, moving in the treetops. And They looked across the creek on a white sandbar, and they saw something standing there, something huge, tall. And he said as the sun come up, it stood there and was looking at it. It didn't move, like a statue. And as the sun come up and they could see more of it, it was about 150 foot from them. And he said that he noticed it was about maybe 10 or 11 foot tall. He said it was a monster. He said it had long, stringy hair all over its body. He said there was no hair on his face that he could tell from that distance. And he reached up and it grabbed a hold of a limb coming off of a bluff. And he was standing on this white sandbar. It reared back and it roared. He said it echoed through the woods. It said it scared him so much that he said his hair on his head stood up so hard his hat almost popped off his head. And I can about imagine that. And he said they just froze and it turned around and stepped up on the bluff and it crawled up in the swamp and it was gone. Well, scared the fire out of them. So they sat there for about 15 minutes because they didn't want to run into it again. And then they went to investigate a little bit and look. And Uncle Lewis said he got over there. He said where that footprints was in that white sand, he said it was probably about 20 inches long. He said it was just unbelievable, but it was the shape of a man's foot. And he said that limb it grabbed a hold of off that bluff was about 12 foot in the air, which would be consistent with something about 10 foot tall. Then it stepped up on the bluff, which is about 5 foot in the air. So that was consistent with something 10 foot tall. So he said he just scared them so bad, they never went back there again. And I believed every word he said. And and I told him, I said, Uncle Lewis, the reason why I believe you is because I trust you, number one. But number two, I told him my encounter and what I seen back in 75 in Arkansas. And he just about almost broke down and cried when I told him. He said, so I'm not crazy. I said, no, sir, I promise you're not crazy. I seen something similar. And I said, these things are real. They're around. You've seen one. I've seen one. I know other folks have seen one. And I said, man, look, I said, these things are real. I don't know what they are, but they're real. And so he opened up to me on that. And from that point there, that's when I started coming forward with mine a little bit. And I told my wife and my kids, and they couldn't believe it. And I said, what? I said, yeah. This was back in the 70s, and I said, but, you know, I kept it inside me all this time. But anyway, but that opened me up to start going ahead and coming forward with this. But it just rattled me. This encounter rattled me because it just changed my life. When you come face-to-face with reality, what do you do? What do you do when you come face-to-face with reality? And you're looking at it, and it's just... So it gives me chills even thinking about it right now. It was 47 years ago.
Gives you the old goosebumps.
Yes, it does. Because I know in law enforcement, when we talk to people who've had traumatic experiences, it doesn't matter how long ago it's been. Traumatic experience, it embeds itself in your mind. You never forget it. You'll remember the details 10 years later, 20 years later, 100 years later, if you live that long. You remember the details. It just burns it in your brain, etches it in your brain. And this was a traumatic experience for me because I was not let on to what happened. And I was in the military back then in 75, in the 70s. And I was stationed at Fort Polk here in Louisiana. And I was attached to 61st Infantry Battalion out of Fort Polk. I had a girlfriend that I met through a partner of mine who I was stationed with. And she lived outside of Camden, Arkansas, which is a small town. Back then, it was a small town. I haven't been back there since, but this is back in 75. And they lived on a small, on a farm. I call it a small farm, about 250 acres, about 10 miles outside of Camden. It's about a 4-hour drive for me from the post. So on weekends, we was off. I'd hop on, drive up there, make the 4-hour drive up and stay with her and her family on the farm. And got to know her daddy real well, and I helped him. You know, on the farm, work the cattle, hogs, go ahead and fix a pair of fence and build fence and such. And I really enjoyed that. And, but in any case, this one particular Friday night, and I never forgot this, we got up there. I get there about 8:30, and her granny would cook. Her granny was an amazing cook. Old country gal. She was probably close to about 70 years old back then. Could cook, I'm talking about. My goodness, son, just make your socks fall off. He was so good. And she was an old Pentecostal gal. Had her hair up in a bun, wore this long skirt thing and all that, which was their belief. And hey, that's fine. Hey, I don't knock anybody's belief. I respect everyone's belief. So we were, after supper, we were hunkered down in the den. Me and her and daddy, her mama, her and brothers. We were watching TV. And her granny was in the kitchen washing dishes at about 9:30 at night. And all of a sudden, she screamed. And I, this is an old farmhouse. You holler, it's going to them walls like a megaphone. She hollered, she screamed like bloody murder, son. I mean, we all jumped up, ran down the hallway to go ahead and see about her. I was the first one there. And being military, I was, you know, like a bullet. I was an airborne ranger. I was running, son. I was 100 miles an hour. And I was the first one in the kitchen. I almost got a flip over her in the kitchen door because she was sitting right there on the floor in the kitchen door. And I almost got a flip over. And she was pointing over at the window over the sink. And all she was doing is yelling, "I seen it again. I seen it again." Well, automatically to me, I'm thinking it was an intruder she saw, someone trying to break in. Well, her son, who is my girlfriend's daddy, knew exactly what it was. Evidently, it's been around before. And I heard pretty much, you know, put one on one together when she said, "I've seen it again." But in any case, he said, "Grab guns." He had guns on the hallway racks, gun racks down the hallway. So we all armed up, ran out the back. And with the girls, my girlfriend and her mama stayed in with Granny to help her, tend to her because she was pretty shook up. We went out the back. Her brothers went to the right. Me and her daddy went to the left. We paired up. And I remember how bright it was outside. It was 9:30 at night. The moon was so bright that it just made it look like daylight outside. I'm sure you've seen that before. I mean, it was like I can see plumb across the field of the pasture. I can see the cows all on the other end of the pasture, all hunkered up. I can see trees. I can see details, everything. It's almost like daylight. It was that bright. And so you had no problem seeing where you're going and making things out. But I noticed some cows was all across that pasture, all hungered up together, and they was cutting up. Now, that's a sign right there that, you know, something spooked them. They're spooked. That's how they do. When they get spooked by some, maybe a predator around or whatever, they hunger together and they start cutting up. That's their defense mechanism. Well, but that really didn't catch me off guard too much because that could have been a predator like a panther or a bobcat or something out there. Didn't know. But what did catch my attention when we come off them stairs down, coming off that porch, is his three hunting dogs. He had three blue tick hounds, full grown. And these dogs were trained to go ahead and run deer and squirrel, peachy squirrels. And they were all three under the porch, whining, scared to death. Now that caught my attention because I'm thinking, wait a minute, that's an intruder, a feller looking in the window trying to break in. Them dogs been running him through the woods. You'd have heard them cutting up 5 miles away, running him through the woods. But they're under the porch and crying and scared. So I looked at her daddy. I said, "Hey, what the hell's up with this?" He said, "Come on, come on." He knew what it was. And he did not let me in on it. So I'm in complete dark here. I don't know what we're going after. Whatever we are is one bad son, I promise you. Because if it can scare three full grown hound dogs that are trained for hunting, it scare them. We're going after something that bad, bad, son. So I don't know what it is still. He won't tell me. Well, we approach this fence post, corner post. Now, we just built this fence. This fence was the dividing fence that divided the 50-acre swamp. He had a real thick, I mean, bad thick swamp. You couldn't see 5 foot into it. It was so thick. Briars and everything else. And then a bunch of trash bushes, we called them. And then it divided the pasture. And we made it out of 4 foot cattle panel with a stretch of barbed wire. So it's about 5 foot tall fence. We come to that corner post right there. And we caught a stench. And I'm talking about something rotten, son. It smelled like matted piss. That's the best way I can describe it. Old matted piss. It liked to gag us. And so about that time, we got about 10 foot from that fence post and all corner post, and all of a sudden, we jumped something up. And when I say we jumped something up, I'm used to jumping up deer all the time. I mean, you hear them rustle through the weeds and trees and limbs and such. This sounded like I couldn't see it because it was in that thicket, you know, deep enough we couldn't see it. But it was right there, not far. And it sounded like a 2,000-pound rhino, son, twisting and turning, just limbs cracking and breaking, trees rattling and rolling. I mean, dry leaves crunching. It just sounded like it was a bull inside there going crazy. Then that's the point where my whole world changed right there. It gives me chills even going to this point. Gotta bear with me for a second. It cleared the fence. I don't know what the hell this thing was. It cleared the fence like a track star. And it landed in the pasture. And when it did, it crouched down. And then it stood up. And when it stood up, we're right there. This thing wasn't 25 foot from us. I'm not talking about something 100 yards away. I'm not talking about something 100 foot away. I'm talking about 25 foot in front of us in the clear pasture. And it was flank of us. It wasn't looking at it, facing us. It was flank of us. I don't know if it didn't want to look at us, no more than it wanted to look at it, but it was flank of us. And when it stood up, it was about 8 foot tall, at least 8 foot tall, covered in long, stringy hair. It was matted brown, blackish hair. It was long. And when I say matted, like, you can tell it'd been rolling around in the woods for a while. And it was flank of us, so it was looking to the right, away from us, and we can tell its profile. Now, I can tell off the bat it was no bear. I knew it wasn't no bear. Number one, they ain't got bears that big over there in Arkansas. And number two, you can tell a bear because a bear's got somewhat of a snout. This thing was flat-faced like a man on the profile. And the way its hands were, huge arms, muscular, broad shoulders. That throws the bear out the mix too, because a bear's got slope shoulders. I've seen many bears. I've seen grizzlies. I've seen sugar bears. We call them here in Louisiana. I've seen black bear. This was no bear. Bears got slope shoulders, and they have a snout. Now, a bear can stand straight up. It dang sure can, and it can walk straight up too. It can, but it can't. Doesn't have broad shoulders. It doesn't have big, massive hands. It doesn't have a big muscular structure. And it dang sure can't run like a man. And this thing, once it went ahead and stood up like it did, it went ahead and ran. And it ran away from us across the field. Only reason why I didn't unload my weapon. I can't speak for my girlfriend's dad. He was scared shitless. Excuse my language. But I can speak for myself. I would have fired in a heartbeat if it aggressed us. But it didn't. It ran away from us. So I did not fire. Held my fire. He had a flashlight in his hand. He was wiggling his hand. We didn't need a flashlight, bright as it was, but his hand was so shaking because he was so nervous. I had to grab a hold of his hand. We watched it run across that pasture, and then it busted through the cattle gate. Now, that might not seem too strange, but that cattle gate we built, and that cattle gate was made out of 2x6s, 2x6s oak. If you know anything about oak wood is a very hard, heavy wood. You just don't break oak wood, and especially 2x6s. It took a D9 dozer or a tractor on full throttle with a front end loader to go through that thing and bust it up like this thing did. It is echoed through the woods, and then it went ahead and roared as it ran away from us. And that roar went through the woods, son. Oh, my goodness. It started out like a panther. If you ever heard a panther scream, like a woman screaming real loud, and it ended like a bassy, broad elephant or a lion or something rumble. I ain't never in my life heard anything like it before. And I've been in woods all over the world, and I've never heard anything like it. I've heard every kind of critter you can imagine. I've heard panthers. I've heard bobcats. I've heard wolves. I've heard coyotes, hoot owls. I heard everything you can imagine. I can't relate nothing I've ever heard to this. And I live out here in the woods right here. There ain't but six houses on this hill from, right, said I was 500, 5.5 miles out my back door, next town through the woods. And I hear critters all the time out here. And I've been here 40 years. I've never heard anything like that before, since. Well, I'm going to tell you, I have heard it one more time before on a recording, but I'll explain it to you in a second. But as far in real life, I never heard that again. Made the hair and back of my neck stand up. Like I say, you got to forgive my nervousness here, because this has taken me back 47 years. And what made it worse for me I was expecting to see an intruder, a person. I had no idea what we were going to see this. My mind is trying to rationalize what I've seen. And it can't. So I was in shock. Well, about after it roared and it went off and it ran off down to the woods, we didn't pursue it any farther that night. Her two brothers come running around from the other side of the house. They was yelling, "Hey, did you hear that? Did you hear that?" And I said, "Hear it? We've seen the damn thing. Y'all seen it?" I said, "Yeah, we did." Her daddy was still shook up. I had to sit him down on the step. And so her oldest brother, once we calmed down a little bit, her oldest brother, he's about 6'4". And I got him to stand under the kitchen window. Now, this house was in the woods, and it's not too far from a river. Evidently, that river would flood every once in a while because they had their house on pilings. And so in case it did flood, he got under that window, kitchen window. And like I said, he's 6'4", raised his arm up all the way. So his fingertips going up, probably close to 7 foot. And he could barely touch the bottom rim of that kitchen window, which put in consistent with something that had been 8 foot tall or taller looking inside that kitchen window. This thing we saw, like I said, about 8 foot tall or taller. It had to have been every bit of 700 pounds. Every bit of 700 pounds. Massive. I've never seen anything that big before in my life. So, well, we went inside after that. Granny was calmed down. Everyone, her daddy, we had to sit him down for a little while, get him some ice water. And got with Granny. I said, "Granny," I said, "look," I said, "we went out there and I don't know what this thing is. I've got the world shock of my life seeing this thing. I don't know what it is." I said, "but you saw its face looking in the window." We didn't get a look at its face because it was flank of us. We got the profile look. We seen its body real well. We didn't see its profile. I mean, we see its face real good. She goes, "I saw its face perfectly. It looks in that window every once in a while at me." I said, "so this isn't the first time?" She goes, "no, it is. Every once in a while, it'll look in the window. I guess it's curious or something. It never tries to break in the house. It never tries to attack us. It's just curious, I think." I said, "what's it look like, its face?" She said, "it looked like a huge man's face." But she goes, "it wasn't no man. I promise you, it was no man." That gave me chills. And I said, what other features did it have on its face? She goes, "it had hair around its face. It had a big nose like a man. Mouth. The skin was kind of rough looking, but the eyes were glowing red." And I said, "glowing red?" She said, "glowing red." Well, that really shook me. Well, after that, everyone tried to calm down. And we tried to sleep that night. There wasn't much sleep going on in that house, I promise you that. Next morning, we got up. Granny cooked us breakfast. And good God, if it wasn't for her breakfasts, I probably would never go, kept on in meals. I'd have kept, probably never kept going back, but I did. Them groceries you can cook. But anyway, after breakfast, we went outside to kind of pull a recon, kind of look and see, you know, well, we can find tracks. We can see more damage with this and that. We started back at the point where we saw him jump that fence out of that thicket. We figured we'd find some hair or something on that barbed wire. Like I said, that fence was made of 4 foot kennel panel with a switch of barbed wire over it. There was no hair in that barbed wire whatsoever. It cleared that. We found the tracks. We followed them tracks, and them tracks right there, I can put almost, not quite, but almost my feet end to end. And my feet's about 11 inches long. And I go ahead and put them end to end and almost fit in one of his tracks. About 18, 19 inches long, something like that. As far as wide goes, he's about twice as wide as my foot. Big. Anyway, we went down to where the cattle gate was. We broke that, tore it up. Them oak two by sixes were splintered. They were just busted up and splintered, son. Now we found some hair in the barbed wire there. Long stringy hair. But this is back in the 70s. Now understand, this is long before computers was out. There was, no one even knew what a computer was back then in the 70s. No cell phones. Cell phones didn't come out till the late 90s. There was no internet. And so back then, there was no, we didn't see any reason to keep anything. At least I didn't, you know, but today, yeah, we'd scrape up everything. But because today you have DNA testing, you have computers, you got all this and that. We didn't have all that stuff back then in the 70s. So it was just caveman type stuff, you know. We didn't worry about it. Now, they might have kept some of the hair. I didn't. I wish I kind of would have now over the years. But like I said, you never think about things till past tense.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
Well, we followed the tracks. I want to say this. When it busted in the cattle gate, now about 20 foot to the right of that cattle gate was the corner post. And if you don't know anything about, you know anything about fencing, when you build an old farm fence, your corner post has got to be the most stoutest post of the corners of the fence system, because it holds the tension. Everything revolves off the tension of the corner post. So your four corner posts have got to be your tension, their biggest posts of all. So back then they used to use cut down telephone poles. When they hit and sink them down about 5 foot, 6 foot in the ground, that's your corner post. And you come off of that, you build your fence system. When that thing went through that dang, through that cattle gate, the force of that critter going through there was so powerful, it didn't break it, but it pulled that corner post over and laid it down. Now, if you can understand the force, the immense force it took to lay down that corner post, that's a telephone pole, cut down telephone pole, and sunk down 6 foot in the ground, that's some force, man. Man, I'll tell you what, and it got me thinking, if one of these things got a hold of somebody, what could it do? Oh, my goodness, son. It'd tear a person in half. I'm talking about like it was a rag doll. It just gave me the shivers. But in any case, after all that, my girlfriend's daddy, we kind of sat down and he said, Steve, I'd like to ask you not to talk about this. He said, we don't want the word getting out. Camden's a small town. We got a name in this community. We don't want to get out and going ahead and people laughing at us and folks cutting up about us and making us a town joke. I said, don't worry about that, sir. I said, you can count on me. I'll keep my mouth shut. And I did. For all them years, I wouldn't talk about it. I kept it inside me. And, you know, it's not just because I promised him that, but because of the fact I'm thinking in my mind, what would folks say about me coming out with this? Hey, I just seen this critter the other night. He was 8 foot tall, covered in hair, 800 pounds. And he was massive monster right there, man. You know, we see them all the time, you know. Hey, look, I'm going to tell you what. I didn't dare go ahead and talk about nobody. And like I said, the first one I mentioned to my wife's uncle, Uncle Lewis, and he was the first one I told, just to calm him down, and it worked. And from that point there, I got a little more comfortable and went ahead and told my wife about it. She had a hard time with it at first. My sons took, they believed it in a heartbeat. They said, man, you know, and then from that point there, once I come forward and I really started to go public with it. And I did that one podcast. I told the old boy that had the podcast, I told him, I said, I feel so much better coming through this thing. I'm just telling it like it is, son. And I'm just telling it like it is, what I seen and what was. It's just, that's it, verbatim, right there. You know, when folks ask me, hey, what did space look like? I don't know. I can't tell you what its face looked like. The only mention of its face I can tell you is what Granny told me she saw when it looked in the window at her. I didn't see its face. And I'm the kind of person, if I don't know for sure, I'm not going to say it. I will not say it because I've heard people talk before, well, this and this and this, and then I'll change the story next time, and the next time they change it again. Uh-uh. If I didn't see it, I'm not going to say I saw it. And I didn't see its face. I saw its body, and I can tell you what its body looked like. And I can tell you that forever. But I can't tell you what I didn't see. All I can tell you what Granny told me she said she saw. Now, I want to tell you this. I had a hard time with the red eyes thing she said, because I'm not doubting her, but I never doubted her. No, I never doubted her. But I never heard of red eyes before and something. That's vampire type stuff to me. Anything's possible in this world. I found that out that night. But red eyes? Well, here about 4 or 5 years ago, I was watching, me and my wife was watching the Discovery Channel, and we was watching a deep sea exploration show. And they had a sub going out there in the ocean, diving deep. I mean, one of them experimental subs, they go down there about 10, 12,000 feet looking at sea life and just trying to figure out this and that and everything else. Well, it showed these school of fish, these weird looking fish. And of course, down there, 12,000 feet, it's dark as you can't see your hand in front of your face, dark, you know, pitch black dark down there. Well, these creatures, these fish, evidently had developed a way of seeing in the dark. And he said it's basically like an X-ray or a night vision type of thing, IR. There are means of that where they can see in the darkness, find food, shelter, what have you. And what it was, and it showed these entities, and you can see these fish, red beams coming out their eyes. I mean, red beams coming out their eyes like a flashlight, son, through that dark water. And when the sub got to the front of them and showed their eyes were glowing red. And it just hit me. That's what Granny seen. And the guy, the fella that was narrating, he said these fish have developed this sense of IR, you know, in the darkness to go ahead and find things and such. And it's the survival mode, or survival means. He said, and if deep sea creatures can develop this kind of technology or ability to have night vision like this, red eye night vision, what says that land-based creatures can't? Made all the sense in the world to me right there, and explained right then to me what Granny saw. I believe these creatures have IR. They have a night vision ability. Them red eyes are nothing more than this, what them fish had, able to see in the darkness. And I believe that explains a lot. I've studied a lot about these creatures since then on my own, and kind of just putting pieces of the puzzle together. And I ain't swearing this by gospel. I'm just saying what I've come up with, okay? As a law enforcement officer, we are trained to go ahead and, you know, look at specifics, look at things, build your case build your case, what you do. Look at incidents. Look at proof, look at evidence, and go ahead and combine it together and put things together like a puzzle, what you're doing. Once the puzzle's complete, now you have your case built and you know what you're looking at. You have a concrete form. And that's what we did in law enforcement when we were going ahead and doing investigations. So I did the same format with this. On people, what they're seeing, what they were experiencing, on these creatures, why they move so fast. How come people can't find them? Why are they so hard? Here's what I come up with. My complexity of this together is what I come up with. These creatures evidently are not just pure animal. I believe that they have a human sense to them, a piece of human to them. They have to, because of the fact they know where to go, where not to go. Sometimes they're going to have to make a run, whatever they got to do, like the one in front of us. But a lot of times they get out there. And here's who I want to throw at you on this, the main part. They freeze frame. Animals have an ability to freeze frame. What I mean by that is, I don't know if you've ever deer hunted or squirrel hunted before, but I'm an avid deer hunter. I've been squirrel hunting, deer hunting all my life. a deer will stand, can stand. What makes a deer hard to see? We look out in the woods, but we sense movement. Okay. We sense movement. And we might look at a wood line and you see trees out there. If nothing moves, you can't see it. But if it moves and it breaks that form, bam, now you got it pegged. Military teaches you camouflage, true camouflage. People say, well, it's wearing real tree and going ahead and having limbs to got your head. And that's what camouflage is. Real camouflage is nothing more than military's version of that than breaking up your form and blending into your surroundings. That's what it is. Nothing but being like an animal. That's all it is. That's what animals do. They break their form, blend into the surroundings. And that's what these creatures do. Okay, that's what it's so hard to see. People say, well, I've never seen one. I bet you have. I bet you have seen one, but you just didn't know it. You didn't know it because it didn't move. It's in the wood line watching you. They see us before we see them. I promise you that. So when you take an animal like this, that is part human, part animal, and look at the complexity of this. Okay, the human intel to recognize trail cams, recognize these little cameras and here and there and everywhere else so they can know when to avoid them. They can reason like a human. If you can read, an animal can reason, that gives it a huge edge. Now, take a bobcat, panther, you take a squirrel, you take a rabbit, whatever, a deer, and you combine the cunning, the speed, the ability, and the camel ability of these animals with human intel, you come out with the perfect creature, perfect creature, perfect. You can imagine having human intel, human reasoning, to be able to go run 45 miles an hour, like a bobcat or a deer or a panther, be able to freeze frame in place and stand still where no one can see you, hunker down, and I mean, whatever. I know when I've been deer hunting before, and I remember watching the show, these two deer hunters were world-class deer hunters going through the woods trying to prove how easy it is to find deer. The computer showed where the deer were. These guys walked right by and didn't even know they were there. Deer sat there, just hunkered down in the bush. Them guys didn't even see it because they froze frame, they froze in place. Animals do that. It's how they survive. I remember squirrel hunting, and this was my own experiences. I mean, I'm telling you what I personally seen. Squirrel hunting, and I'm going out with a few other fellas, and we're squirrel hunting together. These guys are as squirrel experienced in squirrel hunting as I am. We're all standing on this pine tree, looking up about 45, 50 foot in the air, seeing a stump up there, like a bump. A lot of times it's a squirrel. A lot of times it's the pine knot. Don't know. Okay? Watch it for a while. Look for movement. Don't see it, you move on if you want to. Pretty good size pine knot, so, you know, bump. So they went on, and I stood there. They waved me on. I said, I just gave them the hand. No, I'm not coming. I'm going to wait for this thing. I think it's a squirrel. I think it is. I don't know. Might be wrong. I'm watching it. About 10 minutes later, I seen that tail flash, son. I seen that tail flash. Boom. Came down the biggest black squirrel I've ever killed in my life. So when I showed them fellas, well, it wouldn't move. No, they freeze frame. That's their survival mechanism. Next time you see a squirrel, look at that thing. When it stops, it'll freeze. It'll freeze in place. It won't move. And if it's up in that tree high enough, you won't know what it is. And you'll think it's just a bump or something or a pine knot. You'll go on. That's a survival mode. That same thing with the deer. These creatures, same way. They freeze. They stand still. They'll see you before you see them. And that's the whole ticket. So I put one and one together, and I'm just... These things, that's why no one can see these guys, you know, unless they want to be seen. That's what it is, evidently. I think their odor they give off is kind of a giveaway. Now, I don't know if all of them have that or not. I don't know. I believe they're like humans. Humans are not one alike. Everyone's different. So this one might be like this one, may not be like this. You know, you look at it that way. So if you have someone with some kind of, these creatures have some kind of means of intel, human intel, evidently, they're going to have means of other means of human as well. We got to give them that. So this is my only encounter I ever seen these creatures. I've never seen another one again after that. I'd be honest with you, I was kind of worried to see one again. Didn't want to see one again. I live here in the woods. I've never seen one out here. I've hunted all through these woods in Louisiana. I've never seen one out here. And, you know, I know people who have. My wife's uncle, who lived a few miles from me, he, you know, before he passed away, he seen one. You know, thinking about him, I know my other brother-in-law, he seen one years ago, not far from here. And I live not too far from what's called Sabine River. And the Sabine River area, which is a dividing river from Louisiana and Texas, that right there have been buku sightings. As a matter of fact, there's a town called Zuwali, Louisiana, which isn't but 45 miles from here, that the mayor of the town called the BFRO and said, we are having all kinds of these creature sightings over here. Need you to come out and investigate. And they did. Finding Bigfoot came out there and did a show in Zuwali here not too long ago. And all the people, sightings they have there, the people coming forward saying, man, these things are out here. Louisiana is a hot spot for these things and has been for a long time. Now, when I was stationed at Fort Polk back in 76, after this event happened in 75 and 76, later part of 76, I PCS'd and transferred over to Europe. But before I went, I had an event happen. Maybe I shouldn't even go into this because it doesn't deal with any kind of Bigfoot creature. And maybe it's something that I need to talk about some other time. I'm not sure if you want to keep it on per subject or whatever, but it's just another experience that I had in 76. But it was dealing with something else. I don't know if you want me to go that route or not.
Only if you're comfortable doing that, Steve.
Well, I mean, I just don't want to go ahead and do a two-part situation here if you don't want me to. But
well, you know, we have a lot of guests on here, and they have various different signs. So you're more than welcome, Steve.
Okay, I appreciate it. In 76, I was sent TDY. The military is full of acronyms, TDY, PCS, ETS, all that kind of stuff. Well, PCS is a permanent change of station. TDY is a temporary change in duty status. So I was sent TDY, me and five other fellas, TDY to Fort Bliss, Texas. Fort Bliss, Texas is right there on the west end of Texas over there, kind of bordering New Mexico. And so we got sent there. We went to the motor pool. We're given five vehicles, five tons. They were sealed loads. And we were given what we call the skeleton coordinates. Skeleton coordinates, basically what that is going ahead and instructing you in the ballpark area where you're going to, not a pinpoint. They don't want you to know pinpoint because you're following a chase vehicle. Chase vehicle we followed was a military sedan. Military sedan had two civilian in it. They weren't military personnel like we were. They were civilians. They would call them suits. Don't know if they're FBI, CID, CIA. Have no idea. They have high clearances, higher than ours. Orders were to follow them, and we did. We ended up in a location. It was approximately, as the bird flies, approximately 28 miles south of Pagosa Springs, Colorado, which would have brought us out to the northern part of New Mexico, out in the middle of the desert. We were out in the middle of nowhere. I'm talking about it was nothing but desert and mesas and mountains. It's all we've seen. I didn't see a town anywhere within view. Now, over the mesa or mountain might have been a town. I don't know, but we could anywhere else. It was nothing but desert. That was it. We come to a guard shack, middle of the desert. How strange is that? No other buildings around there. No facilities, just a guard shack. About 20 foot to the left of that guard shack is a 6 foot white stop. The guard comes out of that guard shack was his lieutenant. Now that struck me very odd because usually a guard is usually an NCO or below, a buck sergeant or below, corporal, PFC, private, what have you. They have a lieutenant, which is an officer manning a post. Very unusual, very unusual. Anyway, he come out that guard shack, come over that white stop, and he started guiding the trucks. And bumper to the white stop. Next truck, bumper to the bumper. Next truck, bumper to bumper, bumper to bumper. We were all around the vehicles, and they were sealed loads. We're out of the vehicles, other side of the guard shack, face away from the vehicles, and stand at parade rest until ordered otherwise about face. Now, you're standing out there in that New Mexican heat. We talking about the heat. You're in starch fatigue, son, combat fatigues, and you're sweating bullets, and you're standing at parade rest, and you can't move for an hour and a half. You're miserable. Talk about. Well, after about an hour of that, I got the best of me. And I kind of looked behind me a little bit to see that peak. That's all it was a peak. I couldn't take a chance of getting caught. And I looked back there and I turned back around again. But when I looked back there, what I seen, the trucks were gone. And evidently they were lower down. That's why they were bumper to bumper, lower down in some kind of elevator system down below. And inside there, I seen, just for the glimpse, I seen like a maintenance facility, maybe some 55-gallon drums, stuff like that. That's all I caught in the glimpse I seen. That was it. But it was some kind of maintenance facility down there, some kind of underground part, which really struck me odd. Any case, after the lieutenant came back and went ahead and he called us about face, went ahead and brought back vehicles again. Vehicles were back topside again. They were facing the opposite direction and all empty. We were ordered to follow the chase vehicle back to Fort Bliss, in which we did. Once we got back to Fort Bliss, took the vehicles, motor pool, went ahead and fueled them up, topped them off, got them all rigged up. And we were ordered into a debriefing room. Got in the briefing room, and we were flat out just told straightforward. What happened today did not happen. This will not leave this room. Period. Boom. Had to sign paperwork. We're on yards. After that event happened, I had a good friend of mine that worked in Army Intel. So here at Fort Pope. So I told him about it. He just brought it up to him. He said, that's very, very curious. I'm going to do some homework on this. So he did. Fast forward 1993. And living out here, right now, my front porch where I'm sitting right now, my rocking chair I'm sitting right now. 1993. He come to see me. He retired. Going back to Colorado. He said, you remember years ago, TDY mission you were sent on, Fort Bliss and all this? And I said, yeah. He said, you remember talking about the coordinates and everything? I said, yeah. I did some homework and I found out, I think I know what you saw. I said, well, I reckon it's all it was in the kind of maintenance facility. He said, that wasn't just a maintenance facility. That was part of a huger facility, a bigger facility. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, there's underground installations all over this country, all over the world. And he said, what you seen was a part of a facility that's known as Dulce Base. And I said, Dulce Base? I didn't know what that was back then. And he said, yeah. He said, you ain't heard about it, and you probably won't heard about it for a while. But he said, in the future, you will hear more about it. He said, computers had just come out. Internet hadn't formed yet. 93 was not much of anything. And I don't think the internet really started kicking off till early 2000s and such. But later on, sure enough, a few years ago, I found out. I said, isn't that something? And that was right in the area where we was at. Now, we didn't see, what they claim that it's down there. Of course, I only saw one part of it, the maintenance facility. That was it. Like he said, it tied into the bigger facility. So, but any case, that was something. Like I said, life is nothing more than memories and experiences. And that's what I'm sharing right now is with you is memories and experiences. And I'd like to end with this, if I may. When I was stationed in Germany, I was over and outside of Frankfurt. And we had caserns over there. We call caserns. We didn't have military installations over there. Of course, you couldn't have. German government at the time wouldn't allow the American military to go ahead and build a Fort Bragg, Fort Benning, Fort Gordon or over there. So we used caserns, old French barracks from World War II. And they had your four quads, your Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. And anyway, so I did this making rounds. We pulled for guard duty every once in a while and unit police guard duty, and we go ahead and have previewed in different areas of the concern. You know, I was accompanying the colonel and the captain making rounds. They took me down through a doorway and then down another doorway and kept going down to different levels, probably about two levels underneath the concern. Blew me away. He said, as far as we can go. And I said, Colonel, I had no idea. He said, oh, you have no idea, son. He said, let's go down five more levels under here. I said, what? He said, yes, sir. He said, every concern in Germany has level seven, eight levels under it. During World War II, Hitler had bored out all kind of underground channels and tunnels. It's what he did. And connecting each other, all these concerns together, underground motor pools, how he transported weapons and this and that, and a lot of artillery and different items without being seen on top side. He would transfer underground highways in Germany. And he had a habit of everywhere he'd go, he would build these underground channels, underground levels, and do that. And this is back in the '70s, in 76, 77. And he told me, he said, Hitler did the same thing in Antarctica. This was long before anyone even knew about Antarctica being any kind of ties to UFOs or anything else. Like I said, this is back in the '70s. And he said, Hitler was over there. He had built underground levels under there too. And he said, in Antarctica, he was on to some big things, very big things. He said, it ain't no mistake. And it ain't no mistake or guesswork why we brought all his top scientists over here after World War II to continue on their experiments. He said, there's reasons for that. Over the years, he said, you'll be hearing more about Antarctica. To me, at the time, Antarctica was an ice cube. I never thought about it, you know. Later on, last several years, what are we hearing about now all of a sudden? Antarctica. That gives me chills, too, because thinking back on these things that I thought, man, here it is, reality in our face again. And I kind of kicked myself for not looking into it back then, but I wouldn't, of course, this is before computers. I wouldn't know where to go, what to look for, what anything else. I'm 65 years old. I still can't work a computer. I don't even have a computer in my house. But anyway, that's how old folks are. I reckon, you know, we just know how to work a coffee pot and barely work a cell phone.
The coffee's important, Steve.
Yeah, you got to have that. And I'm going to tell you this. I didn't mean to go ahead and talk your head off. I'm sorry to talk so much.
Steve, I welcome that, you know, because a lot of time there's these little accounts and sightings and experiences we would never hear, you know, because sometimes people just contact me about one particular thing. And then, you know, then they're like, oh, would you mind if I just mention this, you know, and you have all this other stuff. So, no, it's good, Steve. No, I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, it sure does sound like the Dulce base, the underground, deep underground military base, the DUM.
Yeah, it was, you know, and like I say, you know, now like I told you before, if I didn't see it, I'm not going to say I saw it. I told my partner, I said, all I seen was a maintenance facility. I didn't see anything else. The glimpse I took, you know, I didn't see any aliens running around, that kind of stuff. Of course, I only got a glimpse. I said, but he explained to me, he said, those bases, every base has got its own sectors. It's got maintenance sectors, science sectors. It's got this sector, that sector, security sectors. He said, so you just saw a little bitty piece of a sector of it, but it all attaches together. And these bases are huge. They go on for miles. And found out where we were. And he did the coordinates on it, where we were, when we at White Stop was, when them trucks went down that thing. Actually ended up being 3.5 miles, he said, from Dulce, New Mexico. So, yes, that would be consistent with more likely seeing part of that base right there.
Yeah, that's so. It. It's supposed to exactly be on the Colorado-New Mexican border. Yeah, that's where it's supposed to be, all right. And now, did you say that was 1976?
That was back in 76, yes, sir. Back in 1976. And back, you know, back then, that's right before I went to Europe, got PCS to Europe, and man, I think back on the things that I've seen. I've seen things in the sky. I'm not going to say there was a UFO. I mean, it could have been. It might have been. I know when I was living in California, and I was about 8 years old, 9 years old. I remember it very well. My mom and me came back from town, and We parked in front of the house. It was right there at dusk before it's not quite dark, not quite daylight gone yet. Everyone was on the city on the block was out there in front of their homes looking up in the sky. And we parked there and looked up over our house. About 300, 400 yards up, not far at all, was a long cylinder, a bluish, light blue, long cylindrical object just floating in the air up there. And everyone's watching it. It wasn't just me and her seeing it. It was all the neighbors were all looking at it. And it hung there for about 15, 20 minutes, and then it zoomed off like it was a million miles an hour, and it was gone. So now, you know, my mother was a big believer in alien life forms. Way big, because she was claimed to be abducted several times, and so was her mother, my grandmother. And I remember that very well when she would stay over the house when I was a kid. And she'd stay in the next room from me. In the middle of the night, she's screaming, started screaming, "They're coming to get me again. They're coming to get me again." And, you know, my mother and dad would run inside there. I was too scared to go inside there, you know. But they went, you know, see about her. And every time she took, she'd come into my room the next day and tell me, "They got me last night. They took me last night." So I'm a firm believer. You know, that's what she saw. We saw a blue cylindrical object over the house. She was thinking in her mind, "They're coming again to get her," you know. And I don't understand. I'm not a scientist. I don't understand outer space. I don't understand I know we look at here in this world, we look up at a blue sky and clouds. We say, "Oh, here, this is our little box we live in." But outside this box, my goodness, you know, what's out there? Billions and trillions and quadzillions of light years out there across the universes or multiverses, whatever you want to call it. Hey, we don't know. We haven't got a clue. And so I'm always thinking, you know, we don't have a clue. We think everything's condensed to and confined to our world, not our world's understanding and our world's physics. No, it's not. Our world's physics is nothing. Doesn't apply out there. So I think that there's a lot more going on than what we think. My encounter back in 75 with this creature opened my eyes to that and changed my life forever, because from that point there, I started understanding. Here was my mindset. Before that was, people are crazy who see these things. After I seen it, I said, "My goodness, these things are real. And if this is real, what else is real?" Think about that. That gives me chills thinking about that.
You got that right.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
All around Camden and down to Louisiana, it's greenery, isn't it? There's loads of trees and forestation, and there's marshland. It is so easy for something to live in that region.
You're right. Oh, let me throw this in there real fast. I didn't mean to cut you off, and I apologize for that. But I told you I'd tell you something, and I plumb forgot. And let me just throw it in real quick. Okay, about a year, not even a year ago, I heard my son had told me about it. He said, you've heard of Boggy Creek, creature from Boggy Creek and all that.
Oh, in Fork.
In Fork. Five Arkansas isn't but 4 hours from here, almost 4 hours from the other side of Shreveport. And so my son told me about it. So we went up there, and they have a museum up there called the Bigfoot Museum. And went up there and walked inside, looked around, really neat and kind of cool, and looked around there. Well, so I was talking to one of the gals who worked there. I told her, I signed the book, you know, you signed the book where you're from and everything. And I told her my encounter. She goes, "You had an encounter?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She goes, "Hang on." She had the owner come out, the old fella who owned the place. He come out there and he said, "I'd like to hear your encounter." So I told it to him, told you. And I did not realize how close this was to Camden, Arkansas. Wow, I had no idea. He said, you realize Camden ain't down the road. I said, what? He said, Camden is not far here at all. I said, are you serious? He said, no, a few miles down the road. He said, look, he said, do you realize, he said, that the creature that was seen out here at Boggy Creek in 71, he said, you seen this creature in 75, a few years later, just down the road, a few miles. He said, I'm wondering if that ain't the same creature. So I said, I can't say. I don't know. And I'm sure there's more than one, but I don't know. He said, I've never seen one before. But he said, I heard one several times. And he said, I've recorded one. And he said, I'll never forget it. He said, would you want to hear it? And I said, yes, sir. I said, sure. So I've heard the roar. I know what it sounds like. And I'm not saying every one of them sounds the same. You know, I'm sure there's different roars, different ones, and this and that and everything else. But he went ahead and had his cell phone, and he said, listen to this. And had my wife was next to me, and he played that roar. And he was way out there in Boggy Creek. You know, he was camping out there and heard the roar several times. He got his phone out to go ahead and record it. And, I mean, the hair about my neck stood up. It was dang near the same exact roar like I heard 47 years earlier. Started like a panther and like a lion or something. It was just, they had rumbled through the woods. He said it scared his socks off. I said, son, I said, yeah, I guess so. You know what I felt like? And I seen the damn thing. Well, so that just, I had no idea Camden was that close. And I can't remember what he said, 35, 40 miles away. It wasn't that far at all. And he said, these things will, what did he call it? They hang around in a certain area. They're, and for a while, then they'll migrate off about 30 or 45, 50 miles, hang around there for a while and come back this area like that and kind of four square it like that and do that. And I said, well, isn't that something? Yeah, but Arkansas and Louisiana are both just woods. That's all they are, woods and swamp. That's it. And of course, you got Texas bordering off from that. You got Texas bordering off from that. The other side of Louisiana, you got Mississippi. And, but yeah, that was really something. And I never forgot that. And I said, that's one throw in the mix. I'll tell you that, because I told you I heard that sound, that roar once before, and that was it right there. The second time on his recorder he had on his phone. This whole thing, I wonder, when I go in the woods hunting, I'm not going to lie, when I go in the woods hunting, it's always in my mind. I go by myself sometimes, and it's on my mind, what if? What if I see another one? I had a friend of mine tell me, he said, why don't you call one up? You live out there in the middle of nowhere. Call one up, go in and start whacking on some trees and, you know, knock and do some tree knocks. And I said, son, you don't understand. I didn't want to see the first one I seen. He just jumped out and said, hey, what's up, baby? I didn't want to see the first one I seen. I do really. I don't know if I want to see another one. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I do. I mean, I don't know. It's just embedded in me. What it shocked me when I seen the first one. If I'd have known what it was while I was going after when I've seen it, it might have not hit me so hard. But not knowing what it was, and going out thinking of some fella I'm going after, and I'll turn out to be this creature. So, yeah, it definitely put the shock in me.
Like you said, Steve, you know, they're going to see you before you see them.
I promise you they will. And that's what I've come up with on my little footwork I've done, is these animals, you know, are part human, have a part human ability and animal ability. They freeze in there. They see in the wood line like a deer. Deer will sit there and watch you before you see it. A bear, the same way. Animals can do it. Squirrels, the same way. Bobcats and panthers, same way. They all freeze in place. That's part of their camo. Able to go ahead. We don't see things till we sense the movement. That's what it is. And they're out there, and they can be one out in the woods right now watching me. I wouldn't even know, you know. So
they can hear us, and they can smell us a mile away.
Sure, I agree. And their senses are very stout, very strong. Plus, being part animal, they're going to have that sixth sense, ability. You ever watch a dog sitting in the house, and you're sitting in your porch, and you have your dog next to your chair or whatever, and all of a sudden that dog's ears raise up. His ears raise up, and all of a sudden he looks up. He hears something coming. Now, you don't hear it yet, but he does. He knows it's there. You see what I'm saying? His sixth sense kicks in. These animals have that sixth sense. These creatures have that sixth sense. They know we're coming before we know they're there. I mean, that's how they avoid us all the time. People say, well, how come I don't see one? And if you don't want you to see them, you're not going to see them. And that's just basically what it is. I guess this one here we've seen, He wanted to see him. So we did.
When he was fleeing, you certainly did hear and see him. I mean, to knock over that telegraph pole, I mean, what's that? That's got to be 2 foot in diameter?
The telephone pole was about probably about 12 inches in diameter.
Right, yeah. I mean, they're big and thick.
Yeah, they're very thick. That your corner flips, you got to be thick.
And he flattened that, and he splintered the 2x6.
2x6 oak. He went ahead and splintered them. I'm talking about busted them like a tractor, went through it full throttle. When he laid over that corner post, it didn't break it. Like I said, he just laid it over.
Mm.
And power to do that is unbelievable. And for an experiment, you ever get a chance, go to a, you know, if you get around an old dilapidated farm or whatever, and there's a corner post up there of an old cut down telephone pole, you know, as long as it ain't rotted, try to push that critter over. You can take a truck and go ahead and tie a chain to it and go ahead and try to jerk it over. You'll pull your bumper off before you pull that thing over. I'm telling you.
Got that right. It makes you wonder. I mean, was Granny's cooking good?
It was amazing. I'll tell you what. When she made fried chicken and biscuits, those are the best homemade biscuits I've ever had in my life. I mean, and she made old sourdough biscuits. I mean, they were just great. I mean, they weren't your, when I say biscuit, I know people think, well, biscuits about, you know, the size of your palm. No. These are about bigger in your hand. They were almost a meal in themselves. And when she made those and we shot sausage gravy, oh my goodness, son, it'd make you want to hurt yourself. Her pancakes, I mean, everything she made, but her fried chicken was unbelievable. It was amazing. I never had fried chicken as good as that before since.
When she saw the big feather at a window, that's obviously why he was attracted, why he was coming to the window. He was smelling Granny's cooking.
I would think so. That he'd come to that. Now, you know, I never really asked her if he looked in another window at her or not. I you know, she just said he came around a few times before looking in. But I assume it's the cooking.
Because
you can smell it all over the place. I would think so. And if I was him, I'd be coming for some groceries too. I would tell you what, you know, I'd probably try to figure out how to speak English and say, hey, you know, hey, can I get some? You know, I'm just here for groceries. But And evidently, he wasn't violent. He didn't try to aggress us. He didn't try to aggress her. He didn't try to break in the house. He didn't tear anything up in that farm except for that cattle gate. And that was to get away from us. You know, and I didn't feel threatened by him by any means at all. He could have aggressed us. He could have attacked us like son. And, you know, yeah, we'd open fire, but I doubt the weapons we had would have done anything against him, as big as he was. He'd have had us. Dead to rights, we've been over with, you know, but he didn't. And, you know, concrete's in the fact, I don't think these things are really violent. I don't think they are. I think they're just here surviving in a world like we are, trying to keep alive and trying to go ahead and take care of their families. And I believe they're in families. They have to be, you know, and I've heard folks say, well, they come from outer space. They come from other dimensions. They come, or they're just animals, whatever. You know, hey, I'm not going to say no or yes to either one of those because I don't know. But anything's possible. Anything's possible. I've learned that after that night. I developed the outlook, anything is possible. And that's what I believe. People tell me I believe in ghosts. I believe that. Okay. UFOs, aliens, abductions. I believe that because that creature exists. That opens the whole gate to what else exists too. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. You know, you're absolutely right. If you corner anything, then, you know, they're going to lash out. They're going to want to get, you know, they're going to want to get away. They're going to want to survive, you know. So it makes sense. Instances where there has been aggression shown with Bigfoot sightings, it's simply because you're either in their territory and they don't want you there. You're putting their family at danger, you know. So it makes sense. I think anyone would do that, you know. If anyone broke into your house, you know, you're going to want to protect your family and protect yourself.
Exactly. I agree. You're right on track on that. I believe you 100%. I'm with you 100% on that. I believe that's what it is. And they have the right to protect their families and like we do or anything else. And they're just carrying through with what they have to do. And I think that's exactly right. I agree with you.
When you were working for law enforcement, Steve, would you ever get reports like this?
Yeah, I did get a few. I got a few. And like I said, at the time I got these, I wasn't sharing my encounter back then. So I didn't tell them my encounter, but I just calm them down because I had one gal that was really, I mean, she was really distraught. I mean, she said, you're going to think I'm crazy. And I know what I saw. And I said, ma'am, I said, calm down. I don't think you're crazy. Yeah. But I mean, this, you know, people, I said, ma'am, I said, look, I'm not people. I'm here for you. And I have to calm them down because they were very nervous. They were afraid of getting laughed at. They were afraid of the ridicule. And that's why a lot of people don't come forward. That's why I didn't come forward for all them years. Ridicule. No one wants to get laughed at. No one wants to consider, well, you're just an old kook. You're just, you know, or you was out there doing meth or whatever. I mean, you know, or you was drunk. No, I mean, you know, you got too many sightings. People were seeing too many things. And yeah, the reports I'd take, you know, these were good people. They were good. These were good people that were shook up on what they seen. You know, so I 100% believed them. I did. I told them I believed them, you know, and I turned the report in, follow up on it and everything. But it's just, and of course, I worked with a lot of officers that would laugh at it. Oh, man, that's a bunch of bull. They didn't believe it, you know. And, you know, my outlook on it is law enforcement officer. I've always been a people person, you know, in the military. My job is to go ahead and serve, protect. Same thing in law enforcement, serve, protect. I want to go ahead and make sure the people I'm around are comfortable. If they're not, I want to help calm them down. All right. That's my job. So I took my job serious and, you know, I'm glad I did. You know, when I retired, I was a captain and I was shift commander, and I went ahead and made it very clear to all the officers working for me. This is what I expect out of my shift. This is what I expect out of my people. You know, and this is what I want done. I want everyone treated with respect. I want everyone treated right. And if I find out that, you know, one of y'all is going ahead and trying to frame somebody or do something unethical, you will answer to me. I won't have it in my shifts. You know, so I would keep, in other words, the playing field. I want it equal on both sides, not just one side. I don't want people having, well, you know, people get nervous when they get around the officers. You know, they, oh, man, you know, and I don't want anyone being nervous around me unless they have reason to be. They have reason to be. Then we can get, you know, take it to the next level. But, you know, they don't. Hey, don't be nervous because I'm here like anybody else. I got 2 feet, 2 hands just like you, you know. And so it was, I enjoyed my career. I did. I mean, we had some wild times too, don't get me wrong, but I enjoyed it. But yeah, the few reports I did take, these were people that, you know, had honest, I believed every word they said. I believed every word they said. So, and I'm not saying there was a case of misidentification. There was one in particular that could have been. I'm not saying it was, but it could have been a case of misidentification. But I, you know, don't know. And if I don't know, if I can't see either way, I'm not going to say, because I don't want to take a chance of it being legit and telling that fellow, hey, look, you know, you seen something else. No, I won't do that. Not unless I have concrete evidence, I will not do that. So, interesting career. It really was. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It sure sounds it, Steve. Having experience, what advice would you have to anyone out there which believes they've seen something pretty much like you have?
My best advice to them is to basically go ahead. Number one, you know, think through the whole situation. Think through the situation. Keep it fresh in your mind. Write it down. Physically write it down. Biggest mistake people make is go ahead and try to say, well, I'll have a mental note of it. No. That's good. And having a mental note is great. Yes, like I said earlier, you have a traumatic experience. You'll remember things in detail. However, write it down. Write it down. It's so important. I did mine. You write it down because now you can go over it and look at it, and you know exactly what it is. So that way it doesn't differ. You know, you don't want to tell your story 10 years ago and today tell it and it half it's changed. You don't want that. Maybe it's not on purpose. Okay, but over time, things happen. Things change the way the mind works, memory works. So write it down. Always write it down. Jot down notes of everything you encountered. Keep track of dates and times, that kind of thing. Don't let anyone discourage you. That's what's really important. I'm worried about my folks or my friends or my family going ahead and, you know, cutting up, laughing at me, my coworkers, whatever. Hey, that's their problem. That's their problem. Okay. If they don't want to believe it, that's fine. That's up to them. But you know what? Don't let them discourage you. Don't let them crush your world because their world is covered up in negativity. You know, so I believe in, you know, come forward with what they have to say. I encourage anyone who is, ex-military, anybody who is ex-law enforcement, you know, to go ahead and come forward and share these because people need to hear it. And the more they hear, you know, from anybody, it don't have to be a person in law enforcement or military. It can be a person who comes from medical background. Someone comes from computer background, office background, construction background, gardening background, farming background, whatever. Doesn't matter. The bottom line is you hear, and this is kind of like what I kind of call, and I called in the military, in all law enforcement, SWAT teams, and it's different from what people think. SWAT teams stands for a special winning attitude teams. And what I call that in my shift, I would teach my shift, you know, special winning attitude teams is what we do is we coordinate with people. Okay, so you, as you get with this guy over here, he's a farmer. So what you want to do is get him with other farmers to go ahead and talk about their story. Okay, you go ahead and get with this guy who's in the medical industry or gal in the medical industry. Get them with other people in the medical industry to relate their stories. Because why is that so important? Because they're relating to each other because they all have something in common. You understand? They're in common with their work, what they do. This guy here is a farmer. He's talking to a farmer. This gal here is a nurse. She's talking to a nurse or a doctor. This guy here is a construction worker. He's talking to a construction worker. You know, and that's what you do. That's what I call spinning special winning attitude teams, SWAT teams. Okay. And to go ahead and get people coordinating. So if you have an encounter and you're afraid to share it with somebody, get with someone who is in the same occupation as yourself and who you know, and get with them and share it with them because they're going to be more apt to believe you because you have something in common with them. You see. And that's what's so important. And that's going to help ease the pain a little bit and kind of shorten the blow. But yeah, I mean, there's no sense in keeping inside y'all. And I did all them years. And I regret that. I do regret it. It ate me up inside all them years. The times that I would sit there with my friends, you know, years ago, and I was wanting to bust the seams and tell them what I saw. But I said, no, they'll laugh at me. You know, so I didn't. I kept it inside me. I wouldn't say anything. And the several times I could got with people that wouldn't have laughed at me, would really took it serious and said, hey, you know, so, and stood with me. So, but I didn't take a chance. I was my fault. So I encourage anyone to come forward, you know, and do that. If you don't feel comfortable, get with someone, you know, that you know very well. Okay. Or someone who's in the same occupation as you. And that way you have something in common with them, something to relate to them. That's going to go ahead and help a lot. Get that foot in the door, so to speak. And I hope that helps anybody that come forward, because now people are coming forward more and more now. They are coming out in the open more and more now because all these encounters are happening. People are coming forward more and more now and saying, hey, you know, I had this and I seen this and I saw this last week, last year, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And they're coming out now and they're telling their stories. And it's people are saying, well, yeah, but why? You're going to have occasional fools that come out there and say, well, yeah, well, how come we don't see them on trail cameras? How come there's a blurry photo? How come this and how come that? You don't worry about that. You know, what was it just a few years ago? They found that animal. I can't remember what they called it, but it was like half tiger, half wolf or something like that in off the coast of Australia. And until a few years ago, it was considered a myth, like a unicorn. It was a mythological creature. People said, oh, that don't exist. They'd laugh at you if you saw one. And here a few years ago, they actually captured them. And they found some that actually exist. So this is happening all the time. Also, look at this. Okay, remember when we were kids, the show or the book, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? You remember that? And where it was a big old giant 200-foot-long squid attacks that sub and all that kind of thing. In school, we were laughed at. You know, the teacher said, oh, it ain't real. The squids don't grow more than 10 foot long. That ain't real. That's just make-believe, right? All of a sudden, not many years ago, when they find off the coast of Baja California out there, they found squids that were in excess of 200 foot long squids. These creatures actually existed that were mythological yesterday become reality today. And that's what we're seeing. What's that display? What's that? What that suggest? It suggests we don't know what we think we know. We think we know everything about our world. We don't. We don't even know what exists in our ocean. You know, so we don't know what exists in our world. Well, how come? Well, we don't see it. Well, it doesn't matter if you don't see it. It sees you. How about that?
So, Steve, that is sound advice. So hopefully more people will take heed. Good stuff, Steve.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you and I appreciate, you know, your time.
Steve, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that all for our listeners.
Yes, sir. And again, thank you for your time so much. Appreciate you.
You're more than welcome. I will talk to you soon. Okay, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Take care, Steve.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
That's all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Steve for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.